Again, I wanted to first write the formula and then explain why, and the formula would look like total abstract nonsense or, you know, mess, but then I'll tell you that it completely makes sense. Okay? So here is the formula. Right? I need to give you a definition for P sigma. P sigma should be, well, if sigma is here, P sigma should be a sum of n plus 1 simplices. Here it is. So P sigma is equal to sum I goes from 0 to n minus 1 to the I, because that's sort of the common property of the subject. And then, you know, now I use circle notation because I'm copying my old notes. So H circle sigma cross I circle F0 up to Fi, Gi up to Gn. I is repeated here. Where, so now I have to define all the things that appear in this formula. So where H is the homotopy. So H is the map from X cross the interval to Y is the homotopy. Well, okay. Is the homotopy, the topological homotopy. Where sigma cross I, sigma cross I is the map, so sigma is a map from X to Y. No, from the simplex to X. Sorry. Sigma was a map from the simplex to X. So sigma cross I will be a map from the simplex cross. So you know, actually this I is the identity. I should be calling it sigma cross. So it's a map from sigma cross an interval to X cross an interval by doing nothing on the second component. So basically, again, it's a map which takes a simplex cross an interval to a X cross an interval by doing nothing on the second component. And now I have to tell you what this is. So Fi is equal to, so remember that the simplex was the span of the standard basis vectors in Rn plus 1. It doesn't matter where it is. It's the span of some vectors E0 up to En. Right? So Fi is Ei adjoined 1. So you sort of add a single, sorry, adjoined 0. So you add a single coordinate, you add an additional coordinate, and you put 0 on the last coordinate. So this belongs to the simplex cross the identity, cross an interval, sorry, cross an interval. And Gi is similarly Ei, 1. And it belongs to, again, it belongs to the same place. So now, so all of these live in R to the, so this is in Rn plus 1, cross another interval, it's in Rn plus 2, and this one is also in Rn plus 2. So now let's see how everything makes sense, okay? So this is, okay, how many vectors, so each of the Fs and each of the Gs is a vector in R to the n plus 2, okay? And how many do I have? So from 0 to n, that's n plus 1, with one index repeated, so it's n plus 2 vectors overall. So this is a map, right? So this thing is a map going from, now I have to, since I use the usual circle notation, now I have to map my arrows backwards. So this is a map from the n plus 1 dimensional simplex into, right, why n plus 1? Because there were n plus 2 vectors here. So it's the it refers to the convex hull of n plus 2 vectors, which is an n plus 1 dimensional simplex. So this is a map from the standard n plus 1 dimensional simplex into, well, all of these vectors are vectors in Rn plus 2, so it's a map into Rn plus 2, but they all lie within the subspace delta n cross I of Rn plus 2. This map, sigma cross the identity, is a map from delta n cross the identity to x cross the identity. And the homotopy is a map into the homotopy is a map into Y. So overall, I got a map from an n plus 1 dimensional simplex into Y. So this whole thing from here to here is simply an n plus 1 dimensional simplex in I. I take a linear combination of such. So this really belongs to Cn plus 1 of Y. So at least grammatically it makes sense. I really created the map from here to here. Okay? In principle, you could check that it works. Checking that it works is completely mechanical. It's done on the ugly side of the handout. Okay? But let me explain what it is geometrically. What have we done here, really? Okay? I forget what am I allowed to erase. I think I'll just do it on a... Well, I think somebody should remind me not to erase this, but everything else is good. So I suppose I want to tell you how to construct prisms out of simplices. So how do I turn this into a union of simplices? And then how do I turn this union into that formula? So first of all, abstractly, how do you turn a prism into a union of simplices? So what you do, okay, first of all, this is, so let's give names to the vertices of the prism. So if the vertices of the standard simplex are E0 up to EN, then the vertices of the prism will be F0, F1, F2, F2, and so on, and then G0, G1, and G2, where the Fi and the Gi are simply the vertices of the simplex with added 0 or added 1. So basically, the last coordinate goes from 0 to 1. Okay, now how do I subdivide it into simplices? So here is a clever way to do it. You think of some cardboard, you make the bottom out of membrane, I guess, a stretchable cardboard. Okay, this is now n-dimensional. Now what you do is you take one corner of this cardboard, maybe the zeroth corner, and you lift it up. As you lift up the triangle, well, it's made of a stretchable material, so sort of you get this membrane lifting up, and as it lifts up, it spans a simplex. Basically, if you take a simplex, if you take a triangle, let's make a triangle. So if you take a triangle and you move one of the vertices, the span, the sort of the total thing that it covers along the way is a simplex, one dimension more. In fact, what is this simplex? So the simplex that you get by sliding f0 towards g0, so simplex by sliding f0 to g0 is the simplex whose vertices, it's the opposite convention as, sorry, so I want to start with g2, sorry. So the simplex you get, the simplex you get by sliding f2 towards g2, so think about now lifting this triangle, you know, this way, is the simplex whose corners are f0, f1, f2, and g2. G2 gets added as a new corner. So it's the simplex f0, f1, f2, g2. But you see, I want to take the bottom and slide all of it towards the top. So after sliding f2 towards the top, I'll slide f1 towards the top. So now I have this simplex in the middle. Sorry, now I have the triangle going this way somehow, right? And I take this end and slide it up. And it's a bit harder to visualize, but it's still taking a triangle, taking one of its corners, and having it do a linear motion, so the result again spans a simplex. Now, what simplex is it? It's the simplex whose corners are f0, so the second one, so after that I slide, so after I slide f1 towards g1, and the result is the simplex whose corner are f0, and then f1 gets slides towards g1, so f1 and g1 are both corners, and then on the 2 side, I'm already at g2 and I'm not moving it, so it's just g2. Okay? And then the remaining triangle, the remaining sort of slide, so now I've slid. Okay. So now I've slid up f1 and f2, and it remains to slide up f0. And so when I slide f0 towards g0, but again, I do it after these two slides. So these have already, so the one and the two coordinates already went up, so now I'm taking the zeroth coordinate up. The cylinder, right, the simplex I get is f0, g0, that's from sliding f0 towards g0, and g1, g2, so on the one coordinate I'm already at the top, on the two coordinate I'm already at the top. Now these three are exactly these n plus one or whatever it is. Okay? Now, maybe before interpreting the rest of the formula, let me show you a picture. Well, you've been staring at the picture for an hour now, okay? So this is the picture. And in fact, it also comes with the program that prints it. So I took theta to be 2 pi over 3. Well, you see, I had to choose a triangle. And being a mathematician, I mean, which three vertices would I take for the triangle? So being a mathematician, I took the three roots of unity of order 3. There is nothing more symmetric than that. Okay? So I took theta equals 2 pi over 3, and then e0 is just 1, 0, and e1 is cosine theta sine theta, and e2 is cosine 2 theta sine 2 theta. So the f's are, f0 is 1, 0, 0, f1 is cosine theta sine theta 0, f2 is, well, basically, I follow the dictates of this formula, with the EIs being the roots of unity. Then, then sigma 0, sigma 1, and sigma 2 are the three simplices written here, unfortunately in backwards order. Okay, actually it makes sense, I mean, because sigma 2 is sliding 2, sigma 1 is sliding 1, and sigma 0 is sliding 0. Then, so in fact at first I just printed the, I just had the computer print the three simplices, but unfortunately the result is a prism, so you don't see anything, that's the left picture. But since you don't see anything, I had to write a little program called shrink. And what shrink does is it takes four points. So it takes points 1, 2, 3, 4, and it computes the center of gravity and moves each point a little bit towards the center of gravity. The effect of that, so this is the C is the center of gravity, it's V0 plus V1 plus V2 plus V3 over 4, and then you check that this moves a little bit towards the center. The result is that if you had a simplex, it becomes a somewhat smaller simplex, which has roughly the same shape. So I apply this shrinking to the three simplices, C0, C1, C2. This is only for the purpose of graphics, and you got this the picture on the right. Now the picture on the right, if you look at it, so let's see, which one is sigma? Sigma 0. Sigma 0 is the one that has sort of the most vertices on the top. So it's the backward, it's the back simplex. It's the one that has a triangle on the top and one vertex pointing towards the bottom. Sigma 1 is the kind of thing on the left, and sigma 2 is the one at the bottom. And you can enjoy yourself looking at this picture and seeing how each one comes by taking the sort of cardboard triangle at the bottom and lifting its vertices up one by one. Okay? Are you with me? So I think I've totally explained this picture, this part of the picture. But you see, that is a presentation of the prism as a union of simplices. All I need to do now is to take these abstract simplices and map them into Y. So how do I do that? Well, the map is just, you first map them into, you first use sigma to map into X, keeping the vertical coordinate fixed, and then you use the homotopy to move both the simplex and the vertical coordinate into Y. That's exactly what it should be, right? And finally, the signs are to make the gods of mathematics happy. I don't know how else to say it. Again, if you know, I mean, I could do some calculation with orientations that explains why this is the correct sign, but the more correct thing to do is to just prove that it works. Or I don't know if the more, but an equally good way to go ahead is to show that it works. So on the back side of your handout is the proof that it works. So why does it work? So I'm not going to repeat the proof. It's enough that it's on the back side of the handout. I'll just sort of sketch what goes into the proof. So what goes into the proof is two computations. The computation of P followed by the boundary. So first you do the prism construction, then you do the boundary. So roughly speaking, you need to first do the prism construction. You do the prism construction, you get terms with sort of F0 up F1, Fi minus 1, Fi repeated, sorry, Fi then Gi, so so the index I is repeated, but, and then gi plus 1, and then up to gn. You got terms like this from the prism construction. Then you need to take the boundary. And again, I'm not doing details, I'm just telling you which terms will appear. So there are four terms that might occur when you take the boundary. So there is, and I call them in the handout, I call them T1, T2, T3, T4. Basically, you could either erase one of the Fs, which isn't the special F. So you could be erasing one of those Fs. This is a T1 term. You could be erasing the special F, the F that's been moving, the vertex that. So you could be erasing, the, right? This is how the boundary works. It works by erasing a vertex. So you could be erasing this F. This is term T2, I believe. In T2. No, my counting was different. In terms T2, you erase one of the G's. In the term T3, you erase this F. And in the term T4, you erase that F. Okay? So this is the result of P followed by the boundary map. Now, the boundary map followed by P is different. So here, you start with F0, or more precisely, you start with E0 up to EN. Now you erase one of the terms. So one term gets erased. And then you apply the prism construction. So the prism construction involves picking an index and calling everything before it F, calling anything after it G, and doubling that index in itself. That index that you have picked could be either before the index that you've erased or after. So you get two terms, T5 and T6. T5 has the general shape FF, and then, so this is if the thing that you've doubled is before the erasure point. So it's FFF, then it becomes GGG, then the erasure point, then the missing index, then GGG, GGGGG. And T6 is if the thing that you've doubled is after the erasure point. So the general shape is FFFFF, erasure point, F, a few more Fs, and then GGGs. Okay? T5 is clearly the same as T... God knows what. I mean, whatever I say here. T1 and 5 match. T6 and T2 match. And the exceptional terms, the terms that appear here and that do not appear here, are the terms where you've erased one of the things that's been doubled. Okay? These terms arrange themselves to a telescopic sum, and the telescopic sum leaves the top minus the bottom. And that's the end of the proof. By the way, if you look at the picture, I mean, you should trace the proof on the picture. I mean, sort of the telescopic summation is basically the fact that the edges in between, right, there are the faces in between. There are internal faces between this triangle, between these simplices. So each one appears twice with opposite signs. And that's the telescopic summation. I'll stop here. Okay? So you can play with it. You can have fun seeing how everything really works in detail. Okay. is it okay if I don't do the details? I mean, again, I could. I mean, it's written down in front of you, but I think it's enough. I think the geometry is sufficient, and I'd rather stop. Or not stop, I'd rather move on.
Okay, so. So,
sorry.
Okay. So, again, modulo details, which I'm not going to do, we're done with that. So that remains. Okay? So let me write Hn of Sn is equal to z, remains. That's much harder. So let me sketch it. So the sketch is, here. The sketch is the following. So, whenever I have a subspace A of a topological space X, so if I have a subspace A of a topological space X, then you can automatically create a quotient of X. Namely, you can take X and mod out by A, turning all the points of A to a single point. So I hope you've seen quotients in topology, but if you haven't, it's intuitively clear, right? You crush A to a single point. So basically, as a set, this is A complement, union a single point which plays the role of A, with a topology that I'm not going to specify. Furthermore, well, there is a map from A to X, it's the inclusion map, and there is a projection map from here to here. The projection is the map which maps basically points in the complement of X to themselves, and all the points of A to the collapsed point. And this is sort of like a chain complex in itself, in the sense that the composition, well, it's not quite zero, but it maps all of A to a single point here. So this will be exploited in what will come, okay? But maybe even before exploiting it, let me tell you an example. So example, take X equal to dn, the n-dimensional disk, and A be the boundary of dn. The boundary of dn maps into dn. So here I mean the boundary in the classical sense, meaning not this sense, but just the boundary as a topological space, okay, or as a manifold. So what's the boundary of dn, by the way? It's the n minus one dimensional sphere. And this, of course, maps into dn modulo its boundary. Right, this is this. But what is that? So if you take maybe I'll draw a picture. So if you take a disk, and you identify all of its boundary to a point. So what do you get? So one way to visually do it is to sort of... I need a plastic bag. Right? Think of the disk as a plastic bag. Take the upper rim and collapse it to a single point. You get a balloon. Okay? So this is simply a sphere. Okay? Not a ball, a sphere. Just the outside. But it's n-dimensional, so this is the n-dimensional sphere. So we find that there is a link, a connection between Sn minus 1 and Sn, and the connection is appearing here. So we want, we wish to have some relationship between the homologies of these three things. So the homology of A, the homology of X, and the homology of X mod A, at least in the case, we want it in this specific case, but proving it in this specific case is not any different than proving it in general. So we will do it in general. Now, what will it give us? Well, if the relationship is good, I mean, we don't just want a relationship. We want a good relationship. We want to see what can we say. But if we're lucky, the relationship will give us some inductive way of going up the sphere ladder. So S0, we understand. It's actually not what you think, right? S0 is a union of two points. So its homology is Z squared. Right? Because, so actually this statement is only for n greater than or equal to 1, okay? But anyway, so if you know the homology of S0 and you're lucky, you will be able to work out the homology of S1 because they sort of appear within the same context. But if you know the homology of S1, you will be able to work out the homology of S2 and then of S3 and then of S4, and eventually you succeed. So that's the plan. The plan is to understand this. The first step of the plan is to find an algebraic model of taking the quotient. So taking the quotient is some operation in topology, and then we do the usual thing of finding an intermediate algebraic model. So this will be replaced by something called H of X, comma A, where this is completely an algebraic construction. And then my problem is split into two problems, like all problems that we had so far. One is to show that at least in good cases, these two are isomorphic. And the second case is to understand what the, is to somehow link the this homology group with these two homology groups. Okay? Now, so the title will be there is a long exact sequence of homology group linking the three things that we want. So linking the homology of A, the homology of X, and this algebraic homology XA. Okay? Now, but this I'll have to explain. This. Okay? So I have to explain what is a long exact sequence, why is there a long exact sequence? I mean, I have lots of things to do. Okay. And first of all, what is H of XA? So maybe I'll start with what is H of X and A. So H of XA is easy and natural. Namely, first of all, I define chains of x, comma a. So I'm saying comma a, but you should be thinking in mind, in your mind, like x modulo a. So x with a collapsed. So chains of x, comma a is just defined to be the chains of x modulo the chains of a. Now, if you have a chain in A, what's a chain in A? A chain in A is a simplex in A, right? So if you have X and A inside it, any simplex in A is in particular a simplex in X. So Cn of A is a subset of Cn of X, subspace, subgroup. So it totally makes sense to make the quotient. Furthermore, the boundary map remains well defined. There is a boundary map going from Cn of x, comma a into Cn minus 1 of x, comma a. Why? So, what are the elements of Cn of x, comma a? They are simplexes in x where you disregard simplexes in a, where you mod out by simplexes in A. If you have a simplex in X, its boundary is still a simplex in X. So this makes that sort of suggests how to define the it's a simplex in X of dimension one less. So this tells you how to define the boundary map. The only thing to check is that if you take the boundary of something that is declared to be zero, the result should be zero. Right? I mean, if you want to make a well-defined map on a quotient, you define the map on the top, and you have to show that the bottom goes to zero. So basically, I have to tell you that the boundary of a simplex in A is zero here. But the boundary of a simplex in A is totally in A. So we mod out by things that are totally in A. So QED. So there's really nothing to show. I'm just sort of. So this totally makes sense. So therefore, HN. Okay. So therefore, HN of X comma A makes sense. It's just the kernel of the boundary map as defined on Cn of x, comma a, modulo the image of the boundary map as defined as Cn plus 1 of x, comma a. Okay? Looks simple. Okay? Now, I should say that this has a completely algebraic analog. So, if if AN is a subcomplex of BN, I think I haven't defined what a subcomplex means, but it should be clear. So we have the chain of BNs. So Bn plus 1 goes to Bn goes to Bn minus 1. And then we have An included, An plus 1 included in Bn, and An included in Bn. And then I have An minus 1, a subset of Bn minus 1. And, well, that would be just subvector spaces, subgroups, okay? But I want it to be a subcomplex. So in other words, I want a boundary map here which is compatible with that one. Or in other words, I want to say that if you take the boundary of something in An plus 1, well, in general it's in Bn, but I want it to be in the subset An. So that's what it means to be a subcomplex. So a chain of subsets such that the boundary of something in the subset is in the next element of the chain. Okay? Whenever you have a situation like that, it defines a quotient complex. So this defines a quotient. Did I spell it correctly? No. O here, right? A quotient complex. The quotient complex has elements Cn, or has chain groups Cn, which are Bn modulo An, Bn modulo An, and the boundary map is defined like here. I mean, it makes sense. Okay. Good. So I told you what H of XA is. Now I have to tell you what is a long exact sequence of homology groups. So let's start with short exact sequence. Or let's say what an exact sequence is. Okay? And then we'll do short exact sequences and then long exact sequences and then, well, a part of it will happen next time. So what's an exact sequence? So in general, an exact sequence is, well, one way to say it is that it's a chain complex whose homology is zero. So an exact sequence is, dn plus 1 goes into dn, goes into dn minus 1, etc., by a sequence of maps. I don't know, maybe now I should not call it boundary because it doesn't have to be boundary. So let's call it alpha n plus 1, alpha n, etc. Such that, because really in the applications this will not be boundary maps, these will be other maps. But it's the same concept nevertheless. Such that, well, in a complex, you want the image of this to be contained in the kernel of the next. In an exact sequence, I want the image of alpha n plus 1 to be equal to the kernel of alpha n. Okay? So, meaning, if you go two steps, you get zero. But even better, I mean, if you go one step and you get zero, it means that you came from here. Okay? So this is definition. An exact sequence is as above. So let me give you a few examples. So, examples. Example zero, what does it mean for a sequence like that? Zero goes to A, goes to zero, to be exact. So this is a super short exact sequence. What does it mean if zero goes to A, goes to zero, is exact? Well, it means that, okay, it means that the image is equal to the kernel. But the kernel is everything, right? Because I'm going to zero. So the image, so the kernel is all of A. So the image must be all of A. But the image is zero. So it means that A is equal to zero. So that's a fancy way to say A is equal to zero. Example number one. Suppose you have zero goes to A goes to B. What does it mean? Suppose this is exact. What does it mean? So it means the kernel of the map from A to B is equal to the image. But the image is zero. So the kernel of C is zero. So it means that the map written here, I should have given it a name, is injective, is one-to-one. Namely, the kernel is equal to zero. So I is one-to-one. Or alternatively, it is an inclusion. So to say that the map is one-to-one means that you can think of A as if it's a subset of B, subspace of B. Okay? Two. what does A goes to, no, let's do B goes to C. B goes to zero mean? Sorry, I mean exactness of this. What does exactness here means? So the kernel of this map is everything, right? So it means that the image of this map is everything. So I should be calling this map P, and then image of P is, so P is surjective. P is onto, right? That's what it means. But a different way to say that P is onto is to say that C is a quotient space of B. Okay? So C is equal to B modulo something. What is that something, by the way? This is the first isomorphism theorem. It's the kernel of P. Okay, three. What does it mean for zero goes to A goes to B? Oh, no, 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 no. I should have done one more step. Zero goes to A goes to B goes to zero. What does it mean? I don't know. What should we call this map? Five. So, okay. First of all, the fact that zero goes to A goes to B is zero is exact. Means that phi is injective. The fact that A goes to B goes to zero is exact means that phi is surjective. So phi is both injective and surjective, so phi is an isomorphism. And then the last simple-minded case, unfortunately we will need non-simple-minded cases later, but the last simple-minded case is so-called short, so these are micro-exact sequences. This is short exact sequence. So zero goes to A, goes to B, goes to C, goes to zero. What does it mean? Okay. So the fact that you have exactness here means that you can think of A as a subset of B. Or meaning this map is a, this map is an inclusion. So you can think of A as if it's a subset of B. Or it's a one-to-one map, which means that you can think of A as being a subset of B. The fact that this is exact means that C is equal to the quotient of B. So C is equal to B modulo the kernel of P. But the kernel of P is the image of I. That's exactness in the center. I've used exactness here and exactness here. Now I'm using exactness in the center. So the kernel of P is the image of I. But the image of I is what I call A. Okay? So this is really means that C is equal to B over A. So to say A goes to B goes to C is exact is a fancy way of saying C is the quotient of B by A. Okay? So in a way, this is an exact spaces, exact sequence of topological spaces. You sort of can add zeros here. The zeros don't make sense in topology, but this is sort of an exact sequence. And what I'm going to try to tell you is that if you have an exact sequence of complexes, then it leads to an exact sequence of homology groups. But this will happen next time. And then from the exact sequence of homology groups, but it's a long exact sequence, unfortunately, we will derive the main theorem. Okay, so let's stop. I think next meeting, come on, you have to stop us. I think next meeting is happening in 61A.